Without soldiers, there's no army. And without citizens, you have no soldiers. That is a fact that, while is mostly known today, has been completely forgotten by everyone in the Imperium except for today's winners, and by the widest margin ever, by the way. It was so embarrassingly distant for every... I felt bad for everyone involved.
It was the steamrolling.
Yeah, it was the salamanders and steamrolling. Salamander. Anyway, as always, though, you guys get to decide who gets the next episode. Don't make the ratio that brutal this time, please. So the choices this time are the Iron Warriors, the Ultramarines, and the Blood Angels. Only two of those are going to get made, with the other being put on ice as usual. You know the way to make your voices heard. Make sure we see them in the comments. I will be honest, I think the Iron Warriors are probably going to be next, just based on the sieging we've been seeing for days upon days upon days. In fact, it's the only reason they're even on this this bracket, because I saw the Alpha Legion people there too for a little bit, but they gave up. The Iron Warriors didn't. They set their minds on something and they went for it. They've continued the siege, so they have to continue sieging harder than ever if they want to win this one. So make your voices heard in the comments. Or the review corner for our audio listeners. And there's a little Q&A section too for you on Spotify. So do that too. First off, we begin with something that you'd miss on your first glance into 40K, which is if you see a Space Marine coming to your rescue, that's usually a terrible sign. That's usually the worst thing. Because if Marines are present, it means that A, something so bad is here that no amount of regular soldiers can fix it, and B, I have now become a rounding error in combat.
You are collateral now.
Yes. If a Space Marine's job is to push back chaos from, like, an important facility, that is all they care about. There's a sliding scale, obviously, but some of the least well-adjusted chapters, legions, will just watch you get hosed to the left of them and shrug it off. They'll go, okay. Moving on, because they have that one thing to do. They're very, very effective weapons. That's all they are. They will certainly help and really change the field of battle, you know, but seeing a Space Marine and cheering is the equivalent of seeing a missile flying overhead and cheering. It's great. I'm really glad they're being shot that direction. It's probably going to help us out a lot, but that thing doesn't really care what happens to me. It's going to do what it was fired off to do and then leave. Hell, there are even some Marines that will finish the job. They'll, you know, accomplish a mission they've been set out to do and then turn on you. Because anyone can fall to chaos at a moment's notice, so they don't want to even leave the chance open. No witnesses.
You saw me, which means you saw chaos, which means you could be chaos.
Yes. The only time it's a good thing that you're seeing a Space Marine is if you yourself are a Space Marine. You have a name. That does help. Being a named character in 40K carries a lot of weight.
Which means you're an Ultramarine, which means you're lucky, which means you have plot armor.
Yes. Or you're a member of, like, the ruling class. If you are a governor or something, it's not the worst thing ever. It's fairly good that there's Marines here now. Now, imagine... Now that you know all that, you see a batch of them charging out, dressed head to toe in green, with just this wall of fire that's preceding them, causing nothing but horror on the battlefield. If anything survives that initial wave, they then whip out melee weapons and begin to hammer away at anything in sight, like it's a nail. These Marines are straight up bigger than regular Marines. They're both a little bit taller, and it looks like they've been hitting the gym harder, and they have these burning red eyes. And then the worst part is, once the enemy in front of them is either battered, melted, or set ablaze, still screaming, they will turn around and start looking at you before slowly just stomp, stomp, stomping their way. Most people would be pinned there in fear. Pretty much all of them are in dread for what comes next, because everyone's thinking,
I've seen what you've done to that chaos demon over there. Mm-hmm. What are you going to do to me?
Yeah, the real difference in size between you two becomes apparent as this hulking figure just gets closer and closer until it walks clean past you and starts cleaning up rubble and just starts looking for survivors and helping, like, put together, not full-blown, like, rebuild the settlement per se, though some will, but, you know, like, lean-tos and stuff, because they're so strong. They can just lift a slab of concrete and just it's ridiculous.
Oh, this is a concrete tent now.
Yeah, or even just helping kids find their stuffed animals, which is incredibly jarring. And that's one of my favorite things about the salamanders. That last one is a joke, by the way, but only kind of. There's so much art of the salamanders doing just that, like taking the time out of their day to help people in not just the heroic, I'm here to slay the dragon kind of way, but if your house was on fire, that's not a good example because the fire wouldn't do anything to them. If your house collapsed tomorrow and a salamander showed up, they'd be the kind to help you look around for family pictures that were still there. They will take the time to do the little things for people. One of my favorite pieces of art that's dubiously canon, I'm not sure if it isn't. It's this massive marine of a man just standing in a place that looks decimated by war. I mean, there are still ships flying overhead. You see every other marine in the piece of art with their guns drawn, ready. They're all alert, except for the salamander, who's front and center, completely unarmed, holding a kid's hand and helping them out of the rubble. While, like, carrying another that can't walk. That's the kind of energy they bring. It's not a matter of numbers for the salamanders. They're genuinely, emotionally invested in the people of the Imperium, for better or for worse. They're the only group of Marines, well, not the only, but they're the ones who do it the most frequently, of the Marines who will sacrifice their own numbers for an average guy, which is the equivalent of an F-35 Lightning. I learn. I'm not going to get it wrong twice. The F-35, it's the equivalent of an F-35 Lightning shunting itself into the ground to save a single person. Cool. That's fantastic. Wow, that's expensive. Can we not do that again?
That's a couple $1 million just in the ground.
I think it's $1 billion every jet.
Is it $1 billion every jet?
I wouldn't be surprised.
Do F-35s cost $1 billion?
I have seen like slow-mo footage of them flying, and it's the most both cool and terrifying thing ever, because I promise you, if you showed one of those to someone from the Middle Ages, they'd think it's a steel dragon. It's so cool. But yes, it'd be the equivalent of one of those jets sacrificing itself for a single, not even hundreds of people, not an entire important base, one person.
Just a single person.
And that would be a whole production if that were to happen in our world. Now magnify that 100 times, because Space Marine training isn't just, oh, you went to the gym, you lifted hard, congratulations, you're a Marine. It is very grueling. Very few people qualify to begin with, so let's just start there. If it's like 1% of the population even qualifies to be a Space Marine, then they have to survive the brutal training, which depends. Some aren't as bad as others, but some get really bad. Leave you on an ice planet to figure it out bad. And then on top of all of that, let's say you manage to qualify and then you manage to survive the training, you then need to survive having so many more organs jammed into your body than the human body was ever meant to accommodate, frankly. And that one, you may just pass. That's a luck thing.
It's just like, I mean, a lot of surgery happening and a lot of things being put in.
Every surgery has a percentage chance of failing. That's just a fact. So you not only need to be the very best, you need to continue to be the very best, and then you also need to be lucky to make it to be a Marine. It takes years, and a frankly incalculable amount of resources to make one Marine, and it takes about 5 seconds to lose it. There's a reason you don't want them dying left, right, and center, and there's a very good reason you don't see them in every engagement. Because honestly, a lot of the time, regular people can solve it with horrific casualty rates.
It's because regular people are just cheaper in this universe.
Yeah, but salamanders ignore that edict. And if there is any set of space marines that is the closest to extinction the most frequently, it's the salamanders. Pretty much for the rest of this video, you're going to see them fluctuate from, oh, we're fine, 90% losses. Oh, we're fine, 90% losses. Oh, we're fine, 99% losses. It's just a function of their tactics, because they believe, and it's part of this part of this, we'll get to that later. They believe that the Imperium is its people. It's not the planets. It's not the space. It's the people. And if they go, that's the most tragic loss the Imperium could feel. The only thing worse is maybe if they get the Emperor. That's it. That it's like Emperor, average Joe. And it's not a very big gap between the two in Salamander's eyes. So Salamanders will try and mitigate that human loss as much as they superhumanly can, frankly. A lot of people say that this selflessness comes from their Primarch. Just think their dad, effectively. Vulcan. And it does. To an extent, it does. But they were like this before him. It was just worse?
Worse.
Yes. So the modern Salamanders are selfless. It's a very good thing when you see a Salamander because they genuinely care for you. These ones were selfless to a terrifying degree. They would get jobs that were considered impossible done, but regularly suffer 80% casualties on the field just because of the way they choose to fight. Now, did they get hailed as heroes for that? Yes. Fantastic. Good job. You did what nobody else could. However, having a bunch of people itching to jump on the first grenade they can find, whether you could just run away from it or not, is kind of a problem. So it's a phenomenal thing that Vulcan arrived kind of in the nick of time, because if they continued the way they were continuing, the Salamanders were going to render themselves irrelevant in just a few more battles, frankly. Vulcan took that wanton disregard for their own lives and then he tempered it. He gave it structure and focus, most importantly. And that's the one that's key there. Think of the Salamanders before as a tsunami. Wow, that can do a lot of damage, but it's not the most targeted thing on the planet, and it won't always do what you want, per se. Vulcan took it and focused it to a tiny point, capable of doing whatever it wants.
He turned them into a water jet CNC machine.
Effectively, able to cut through anything they set their minds to and save those who need it the most, because that's the main thing there they had to realize was you can't save everyone, so you need to make every chance that you get really matter. And so Vulcan gave them that focus to do that. However, interestingly enough, the people who needed the most saving were possibly the Salamanders themselves. It's one of the first speeches Vulcan gives his kids, basically, is he tells them that they have come face to face with the Abyss and almost surrendered themselves to it. So that really gives some credence to the theories that float around where, while yes, they were certainly sacrificing themselves to help people, they were doing it a bit too often for it to not have been playing some ulterior motive. It's like, if your buddy was a firefighter and got divorced tomorrow and just started running headfirst into every burning building, is he saving lives? Yes. Should you probably either get him a therapist or go hang out? Definitely. That's the state the Salamanders were in, or at least what a lot of people think, just because of the unnatural propensity they had for this stuff.
Toss themselves into the fire, literally.
Yeah, but that's speculation, right? Part of why Vulcan was able to do this is because he got something rare for his brothers, which is a decent childhood. He was raised by this blacksmith on this. It's a really brutal planet. It's really resource rich, but it's a tough life. It's got really, really hard gravity, and there were Eldar raids left, right, and center. But he still had it pretty good with his adoptive father, with that person taking him in and teaching him everything he knew. Now, granted, Vulcan is a demigod, and he is canonically the biggest of them. So by the age of like 3, he was bigger than his dad. So, and by the age of 4, he was far smarter.
Imagine you have a kid and, you know, they're like 2 years old and they're doing the classic 2-year-old thing of, when I grow up, I want to be bigger than you, Dad. And then literally a day later, they're like,
bam. Double your height. And width, too, because Primarchs don't really seem to have trouble maintaining muscle mass. They're built like brick houses. All of them. All of them are. So, because Vulcan was raised by that blacksmith, and also because each of the Emperor's sons was given kind of a focus, if that makes sense, where they were all really good at one thing, or they really enjoyed that one thing, more than one thing, but it's usually a few things. Vulcan was really good at smithing, right? That's kind of his thing. And so, because of that, and his upbringing, he was able to catapult that planet forward in the tech tree. Pretty, not overnight, but pretty dang far, pretty dang quick. And
how much science does Vulcan generate a turn?
Quite a bit.
Quite a bit.
Quite a bit. And because of this, he was also able to deal with those Dark Eldar raids that his planet was suffering from. Before Vulcan, they used to just hide whenever the Dark Eldar showed up, which is a fair assumption. I don't want to be skinned and turned into a chair. It's a personal thing. I would rather not.
I don't want to be turned into a human leather-bound book. Thank you very much.
Exactly. But when Vulcan heard this, he simply said, could not be me. I know what you're saying, but I am simply built different. And so he walked out there with nothing, by the way. No weapons on hand. Just his basic smithing tools. And proceeded to batter 100 of them. And send the rest running. Upon seeing this, everyone on his home planet basically went, we don't have to hide anymore.
He walked out to the battlefield and said, you know, when the only tool you have is a hammer, everything starts looking like a nail.
Yeah.
And I see a construction job in front of me.
That's exactly what happened. After this, we're going to skip a lot because there's so much to Vulcan. And while he's a key part of today's episode, he's not the focus of the episode. Kind of. The Emperor shows up. They have this whole contest of strength thing. It's all kinds of stuff.
It's the whole are you my dad thing. Mm-hmm. Let's do it with a contest of strength. Let's arm wrestle.
Well, or slay a dragon.
Let's arm wrestle a dragon.
Yeah. They arm wrestle a dragon. They have this really touching moment where the Emperor saves him. And it's a whole thing. It's very, very cool stuff. I quite like it. However, what matters is eventually he does lose this contest of strength and realize, oh, you're my dad. Cool, 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 cool. And he gets taken under the Emperor's wing and is taught how to be a war master. Because, well, not a war master, but a good general, effectively. Which does take a little bit, just because those weren't things that Vulcan knew beforehand, and it's not anything a smith from a backwards planet would have taught him. So he did have to learn. What matters, though, that's all stuff for a future episode, what does matter is when Vulcan meets his legion, which, because he's been learning under the Emperor, did take a little bit longer, it wasn't immediate. When he did meet his legion, it wasn't, ah, hello, father, great to meet you on this sunny day. It was, hey, there's your legion. They've been holding the line against millions of orcs for the last year while their own ships, their personal ships, were being used not for combat, but to evacuate civilians. So Vulcan didn't have a doubt that they were his kids to begin with. Just based on that description alone, Vulcan knew. Okay.
Okay, they were created after me.
Yeah, yeah, cool. It was this death spiral, really. They were going to lose this eventually. Because the way orcs work is, congratulations, you've defended against the orcs by giving them a good fight. They will spread the word and more of them will show up tomorrow for a good fight. Oh, you beat them. Great. You gave them a better fight. More of them will show up. This has been happening for 364 days. So, I'm not exaggerating when I say it was millions of orcs that they were holding the line against. I'm not going to say somehow, because they took 80% losses in the process. Because it's the salamanders. Get used to that number.
I thought you were going to say they are him.
No, they're not. Well, they are, but no. Not enough, not enough for this. And so, Vulcan arrived to put a stop to this vicious cycle. Because it was just not going to end well. And he arrived with recruits sourced from his homeworld. So, fully fresh. It was roughly... it was the same number as those who were holding the line, give or take. So, total, combined, it was twice as many people there. great. And they also came not just with new gear that hasn't been used for the last year, but it was gear made to Vulcan's specification, not the Imperium specification, which isn't bad, but, you know, it's not great. It was made to Vulcan's specification because, like I said, he was taken in by a blacksmith. This is his hobby. He's learned a lot from this, and it's a deeply introspective art to him. So a lot of the stuff he was given, he would futz around with and look at and see, can I make this better? Can I make this? How can we redo this so that it works best for me and my sons? And so, and he still does that to this day. Constantly futzing around with stuff.
He's a tinkerer.
Yeah. So you take these fresh recruits paired with gear that got the sign off from the best blacksmith in the entire Imperium, and the orcs don't stand any chance. There's a line beaten right into them, and then the line turns from, once it gets to the survivors, it turns and goes right for the main guy in charge, which orc power structures are easy. Who's the biggest one? That one, get him. It's so straightforward.
Get the big one. Get the largest one.
Get the big one, the second biggest, and the third biggest, just to be safe. From there, you should be good. It should be chaos. But you need those three. And Vulcan does just that.
After the fourth one, they start popping out a ruler to figure out who's the tallest.
More like shout about it and like... You can't be the biggest orc if your knees are broken, is what I'm going to say. And that's what it's going to come down to at some point. Whose knees are the least fragile? That's what it's going to come down to. But regardless, Vulcan makes short work of this affair. Also because whenever a Space Marine's Primarch is around, they tend to fight much harder. So all the cards were in there. Everything was in their corner for once. It's like they saw Vulcan and they immediately started freaking out. We have to do a good job.
They look to him. There's a light glint in their eye. And they look up and say, Papa? And then they turn back to the orcs and they say, burn.
Yeah. The most important thing that happens, though, is once the chaos is done, they do both halves of Vulcan's Legion meet. And the ones who've been holding forever effectively immediately realize, oh, you're my dad. Oh, this tracks, whatever. But on top of that, they also realize, oh, no, you're better than me. And those recruits are just going to replace me. That's fine. I get it. I understand. I tried the best I could. And they bend the knee to him, to which Vulcan goes, wait. No. I'm not just some petty king. I don't want you to... What?
Just stand up.
No. He actually, this is the coolest thing. He says, I should be the one kneeling here because you've done the most impressive thing. You have saved uncountable lives today at great cost.
He's just like, I just got here. You did this.
Exactly. And I love that he honored the work they'd already done. He didn't just come in, steal the glory and leave. No, he honored the work they did. He also said that they were willing to fight for him, so he would always honor that and be willing to fight for them. In going out of his way to give the power claw, usually the big weapon from the biggest orc, to the previous guy in charge, the previous commander, who was horrifically wounded. I mean, basically quadriplegic. He was never going to see service again. But he gave it to him in honor of what he'd done, because Vulcan couldn't have just strolled in and made light work of everything if he didn't do that work first, which is so cool. So many people just take the glory and move on. Vulcan just...
He just handed it off, just said, you did the work for mm-hmm. me. I literally just got here.
That's not it, though. Because Vulcan then took the time out of his immortal life to forge him a special dreadnought suit, which, if you don't know... Just a dreadnought. Which, if you don't know, they're basically a coffin tank. It's for very, very wounded Marines, and you just inter them there, and they can keep fighting on. They're massive mechs, effectively. And they're usually armed to the teeth, but this one was made by Vulcan. It's made of a material only he could work, is what it said, and it's armed to the teeth. It's so above and beyond other dreadnoughts that it's even rumored that this suit, called the Iron Dragon, is what all dreadnoughts are pale imitations of.
So basically, this thing is made out of adamantium, and every square inch is covered in gun.
And heavily defended. Because Vulcan didn't want that guy to go out and die again. But yes, obviously I'm not saying that, but people are saying that. Streets are saying, that's what I'm saying. It goes to show that Vulcan's words aren't just empty platitudes to these new guys to sell them on joining him. It's the truth. He wouldn't have bothered doing all that if he really didn't feel that way, you know? So now that they've been given a homeworld, fortress, and guidance from Vulcan, they were able to step away from that ledge, and he taught them how to live. Because, frankly, leaping on any and every sword you find on the side of a street does not make you a martyr. To be a martyr, to have a death that impacts people as heavily as your life did, you have to live one first. You have to be patient, you have to be kind, you have to be loving, and that's exactly what the salamanders became. And in doing so, it also made it so when that fury comes back, that willingness to do whatever it takes to get this job done, it's that much more terrifying. It's no longer just charging at you for the sake of it, or charging at you because they hate you, like some of the other space marines will. It's charging at you because they love deeply what lies behind them, and they want to make sure it stays safe. However, it's time to talk about the people who keep this fantastic show safe, and that is our patrons. If you want more of what you already love, right, so a bonus episode every week, access to the community Discord, priority voting for all the topics, which is part of how the Salamanders won so aggressively this episode, and a backlog of all the bonus episodes we've done, because I do see you guys in the comments who binge everything and want more. There is more over on patreon.com/isandraandcoda. If you head on over there, you can help us keep the lights on in here, and you get bonus content, and you get to join in on the community fun. So that is always fantastic. Plus, as a bonus, it's impossible to put a price on this, but every single patron gets to walk around with the moral superiority of, I've done something good. I have done my part in the grand scheme of things, and I'm a good person. Do with that what you will, but that's what we're offering.
You're an honorary salamander.
Exactly. Immediately, that's what you become. Thank you for those of you that are already there. Thank you for those of you who are doing that right now as I speak. And thank you for those ones who I see in the comments who are like, next week when the check hits, I've got you. So I will see you there in a few weeks. However, it is that time in every episode where the Horus Heresy. It's the Horus Heresy.
The Horus Heresy.
It's a galactic family feud. For those of you new, it's basically one of Vulcan's brothers, Horus, decided to suffer. Well, he didn't decide. He was afflicted with male pattern baldness. This paired with the fact that his dad had long flowing hair that showed zero signs of receding even after thousands of years of ruling, it drove him to the brink. And so he decided to have a spat about it, go join Chaos, and take half his brothers with him, leading to the worst fight the Imperium's ever been, one of the most brutal beatings they've ever received. We're still dealing with the consequences today, and it's why the Emperor is stuck on that lawn chair. What matters today, though, is how the Salamanders got through this, with the first being intuition. See, Vulcan, when Horus was first being promoted, Vulcan had made him a gift, an armament that was effectively indestructible in a Primarch's hands, and when they met, Vulcan was going to give it to him, but he sensed
Something's wrong here.
Something's off. See, Vulcan's bald, and he can see the early signs. He noticed the corners starting to rise in Horus's hairline and knew, oh, this can't be good. He won't be able to cope. What will he do without his mullet?
When Horus turned around, he saw the little spot right on the back of the crown there. Yeah, oh, he was like, uh-oh.
Yeah,
it begins.
So he actually held on to that armament, which turned out to be the right call, and wound up using it himself. It's called Dawnbringer. Very cool. Remember that name. It's going to come up later. He would carry this for pretty much after he met Horus onwards, which didn't take long for the heresy to happen after that. So it's the primary thing he used for a good chunk of the heresy. From here, though, records specifically for the Salamanders get iffy. It gets dubious. There's already unreliable narration in 40K just because of how many perspectives you get on it. but it's difficult to pin down truths from half-lies in this one, okay? What we do know, probably, is the Salamanders, like every other, well, not like every, but like two other loyalists, got absolutely belted in the opening moves of the Heresy. It's so bad, this battle on Istvan V was so bad, it's not considered a battle as far as history is concerned. It's a massacre.
Oof.
At the time, the loyalists thought it was just Horus and three others, so four total legions. And their plan was, we are going to bring our full force down on Horus before he can convert anybody else.
Just outnumber them.
So they brought seven full legions to crush Horus's four, which goes to show how good of a tactician Horus was that they felt we need twice the numbers as him to win. And they were right. It did turn out being a 7v4, just in the wrong way.
Oh.
Because they did not realize at this point a full half of their family had turned traitor, including a good three of the legions that were supposed to be coming to help them. I cannot undersell how badly the next moves were for the Imperium. In one battle, it was a long one, but in one battle, the Salamanders lost over 90% of their legion in one fell swoop.
90? Over 90%?
Yes. And it's where you get that harrowing image of Vulcan weeping in these blackened sands, holding one of his sons with nothing around him. Yeah.
90%.
What happened is they decided to assault early, and Vulcan wasn't in charge. He didn't have any say in this, but he knew if I say no, first of all, I'm going to look like a traitor. And at this time, it was shaky. Nobody knew who was who, right? So A, I'm going to look like a traitor, and B, the brother of mine who is in charge wants to go in. Usually he's logical, but he's being driven by emotion. I can't disobey this order. If he goes in alone, he's going to get belted. So I have to go in and help him and hope that reinforcements get here on time. So they go down there into this fight, and it's going kind of well. Not great, but they're expecting when the other legions show up, oh, it's going to be easy money. The other legions do show up, and as they're going to regroup with them, they turn their guns on them and open fire, leading to my favorite battle map ever, which is the worst one you ever want to be on, of the loyalists are in the center, and it's just red.
It's in a circle.
It's just, there's no way out. They put them in a kill box, basically, and began to open fire while I assume Horus was monologuing.
This was Order 66.
Yeah. It was. They nuked Vulcan.
Ah.
He fought for, I can't undersell how bad this was. Vulcan's entire legion was, pretty much his entire legion was killed before his very eyes. And he himself held the line for hours, battering any traitors that came close. They had to resort to nuking him a few times.
A few times.
For him to be capturable.
Not dead. Capturable.
Yes.
No, they were playing Monster Hunter.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to nuke the monster. And it didn't kill him.
No, it didn't.
It was just a trank bomb.
However, he's going to wish that he did, because the legion that picked him up was the Night Lords. Yeah. They've always had it in for the Salamanders. They really have. By now, you know the Salamander shtick. It is kill them with kindness and napalm. The Night Lords, however, have exsanguinated entire cities. That's not an exaggeration. They have done this, which, logistically speaking, I don't want to give it kudos, but organizing that sounds so difficult. How do you, just on an organization thing, how do you manage that? Either way, they organized. I don't know how they did that. They've exsanguinated an entire population just cause, and if tomorrow the Night Lords were put in charge of, oh, hold on, I'm powering through with this. Hold on. If tomorrow... Wow, I wrote that. I can't believe I wrote that. If tomorrow the Night Lords were put in charge of Guantanamo Bay, it would be rated E for everyone. That is the caliber of person or group that we're dealing with. There's that massive juxtaposition between the two.
There's the, I get I'm $1 billion, but I will sacrifice myself for that child.
Yes.
And then there's, I already bled out their family.
Effectively. At a glance, they look completely opposite, like they're completely opposite forces, entirely different. But if you zoom out and look at the picture that the Emperor was trying to paint here, and you use that perspective of, okay, well, he wanted 20 sons, each with a role. How are these ones going to play together? It kind of makes sense. Because there are some forces you cannot kill with kindness, or even napalm, despite how horrifying it is. There are some people who just will not quit. And for those, Kurz exists. Because he will leave them. He will strike fear deep into their hearts. And he will leave them cowering, shrieking, weeping, and begging for mercy. And that's why Vulcan exists, to give them that mercy. It's a yin and yang kind of things. And Kurz knows and accepts this, but his problem is Vulcan doesn't. Vulcan basically says that while we can be monsters, we don't have to be. You're choosing to do this. The Emperor didn't make you. You're choosing this. Which, like, come on. This is what we were meant to be. Stop fighting it. Is Kurz's main argument here. So, when Kurz gets his hands on Vulcan, he sets out to show that Vulcan's not better than he is. His entire goal is to show that Vulcan can snap the same way I have and do the same things I have because we're all the same. Is his main thing.
He's having a Jonkler moment right now.
Yeah, it's a very Killing Joke, actually. And so, from this point forward, Vulcan is stuck in Edge of Tomorrow. Just live, die, repeat. Live, die, repeat. Every single way out that is imaginable is inflicted upon him. Everything from the good old-fashioned guillotine to being shunted out of an airlock, being crammed to the bottom of a ship's thrusters as it's launching away, or just a good old-fashioned massive rolling pin. Everything is available. But it is at this point it's revealed that every single one of the Primarchs inherited something from Dad. Vulcan got his plot armor. He will regenerate from the smallest atoms of him.
Oh, he's Deadpool.
He's basically Deadpool. It's that taken to its logical extreme. No matter what Kurz did, Vulcan would always come back with that same smug moral superiority, which just enrages Kurz because you're not better.
All I can think of is just like guillotine back into existence. You know, you really shouldn't be doing this. Crushes with a massive hammer back into existence. We can be better than this. Saws him in half back into existence. Are you going to give this up at some point?
And at that point, Kurz decides to get creative, which is never good. Never good. Again, it would be like if Guantanamo Bay had a creative director.
Jesus Christ.
Right?
Jesus
Christ. Right?
Awful.
Some positions just, right? And so he accepts that Vulcan cannot pass. That's fine. That's whatever. Cool. We can still break his mind, though. So he chains Vulcan to a table full of food with a starving family that can just barely not reach it. And Vulcan has to watch them. Yeah.
God, Kurz is...
Kurz hands Vulcan a chain and says, hold on to this for a second. And beneath it is an entire orphanage and a massive rock. And Vulcan just has to hold it until he gives. And it's his fault.
Kurz is a comic book villain.
Yeah, he then has people put vision after vision after vision in Vulcan's mind of him running through some noble quest and always failing at the last second, resulting in mass casualties over and over again. He even crams Vulcan in a mech suit and sends it on a rampage against his own legion, and Vulcan can only watch as they're being ripped apart.
Kurz is a comic book villain.
And still, Vulcan didn't relent. Despite all of this.
I can just imagine him with, like, Skeletor's voice just like, Vulcan, hold this chain. Below it is an entire orphanage. Better not drop it.
That's bait, yeah. At this point, Kurz just, fine. You want out so bad? Whatever. Here's that Dawnbringer you like so much. It's in the center of an impossible maze. Figure it out. Have fun. And that's where he leaves Vulcan for a little bit. And this isn't just... I say it's an impossible maze, but that is because its architect was Perturabo. So, it is... It's not something you would find on the back of a cereal box. Perturabo is... the Emperor's master of machines. He's the most adept of all the Primarchs when it comes to industry. He can see a machine, take it apart, and put it back together better. That's his whole shtick. He's amazing at building these megastructures and housing machinery within them that's otherwise impossible or deeply impressive. One of Perturabo's core beliefs is, once you start something, it doesn't matter how you feel. You finish it. No matter what, you have to get it done. Anything else is weakness. And so when Kurz approaches him with the job of containing Vulcan somehow, boy howdy, does he accomplish that. The walls of this maze are completely featureless. Even if you started carving a line into it, it would eventually make no sense. Just, you'd basically be walking, leaving a trail of breadcrumbs, and then you'd see them on the ceiling somehow. And you now have to figure this out.
Are we sure he didn't get himself access to a Tesseract vault?
Nope, this is something Perturabo did in his spare time.
Damn.
Yeah, it is also full of traps because Perturabo and Kurz working together, it was impossible. Vulcan needed the Emperor's help to get to the center. Which he did, but we'll get to that later. The most tragic thing about this entire affair is if Vulcan and Perturabo were on the same side of this, doesn't matter which one, the heresy would have been over in seconds. Because Vulcan can forge any part or any series of parts to such an absurd specification that nothing can match it. And now you give those parts to Perturabo?
And now you have a problem.
It's actually one of the most touching things Perturabo keeps is this mechanical hound that Vulcan built for him that he really likes and is constantly futzing around with. In one of the scenes, it falls out of time and he's stuck there spending hours just trying to get it like back in sync. And it's off by like half a millisecond, but Perturabo's so touchy he would notice it.
He's just like,
He does use Fulgrim's face to break it, because Perturabo also has anger issues, but he does hold it dear and actually regrets doing that. Like, he spends a lot of time piecing it back together. So, it's just, I wish those two were on the same side, but I also see why not, because it would have been decided the second they were on any side. But like I said, much to Kurz's chagrin, Vulcan makes it to the center, and Dawnbringer is right within his reach. Unknown to Kurz at the time is there's a teleporter housed in there.
Oh.
Which is why Vulcan wants it so badly, because if he can get that,
I can just get out.
I can just leave. I'm done. We're finished.
Just portal.
But right when he's about to grab it, he realizes his hand bounces clean off as he realizes that it's shielded. And Kurz just starts laughing. Because he's the worst. He's the worst. And he just starts taunting Vulcan, telling him that, you know, all that hope for nothing. You're just this close and you still can't get it. There's only one way this ends, Vulcan. It's like I said, Killing Joke vibes. It's very much so the Killing Joke.
He's having a Jonkler moment.
Yeah, he's pushing Vulcan to the limit after everything that he's done. And he basically tells him the only way out is by ending me. To which Vulcan takes a very deep breath, looks Kurz in the eyes, and tells him of all his brothers, Kurz has always been the weakest. Nobody fears you. Taking on a different name doesn't change the fact that all of us pity you at the end of the day. We only tolerate you because you're family, and none of us have anything to fear from a petulant child flailing about in the dark.
He murders him with words.
He then... Oh, no, that's not all. The only thing I've been afraid of, Kurz, is breaking you. However, this is the end of the line. I was made the biggest and the strongest, and it's time to show you how big the gap between us really is. And he beats the brakes off of Kurz, using his face to break the shield and get to his get to Dawnbringer.
God damn.
At which point, you know, end of the day, hero saved, presses the button in there, expects to teleport out. The whole room is shielded against teleportation. Because Perturabo. He's a very good architect. Which Kurz then takes this moment to gloat again, despite having his face used to open a door, effectively. And basically tells him that all this time he spent walking towards Dawnbringer, all of it amounts to nothing. You're never going to leave. I have you here. The only way out is by getting me or admitting we're the same. Either way, you've done it. To which Vulcan sighs again and his shoulders sag. Like, it is heartbreaking because that was the only way out, really. If there's another door, the only way he's leaving is by body and Kurz permanently. He holds up the weapon and looks at it and he just sighs, just depressed, basically. This has been months of this and... Now there's no way out. So he just admits to Kurz, you're right. I made this as a teleporter, a means to escape no matter what. And his shoulders sag, and he lets the weapon's weight drag it almost all the way out of his hands until he's just holding on to, you know, the very end of it?
Mm-hmm.
Right, like, you're about to let go of something, but you just barely hold on to it.
The pommel.
Yeah, exactly. And then he tells Kurz, but you're forgetting one thing. And Kurz is in his element. He's loving this because he's won. This is it. I've got him. There's only one way out of here. And so he leans in with the most smug grin imaginable and just asks, and what did I forget, dear brother? To which Vulcan replies, it's also a hammer.
Oh.
And then proceeds to send Kurz flying with a single blow. I cannot undersell. Before, when he was being used to open the shield, it was a very bad beating. Vulcan's not holding back anymore. Even then, he was holding back. With single swings, he's able to go clean through his armor. Yeah.
Kurz is a nail.
And he batters Kurz to the point where he's right about to disconnect. He's right, like, Vulcan basically beats Kurz to the point where it's undeniable that Vulcan could end this with one more swing, but he stops right there just to show Kurz that, no, this is not a front. No, you have changed nothing inside me. I could end you at any moment, and I choose not to, and I never will. And then he's able to teleport out. Because, I mean, you know, Kurz is so helpless in the moment. Vulcan's just allowed to leave. He's done. Also, that was a lie. That was very rough on Vulcan, and he wants out so badly, he doesn't even aim effectively. He just telefrags into Gilliman's backyard, thousands of feet into the air, burning up on re-entry, because he'd rather do that than spend another second around Kurz. I'm not kidding. For a little bit after this, he's nursed back to health by the Ultra. Actually, funnily enough, when the Ultramarines find him, they think it's a statue. They think it's some twisted and burned statue, and only after it starts like reconstituting,
just like moving around, just like, oh, that's alive.
Well, it takes a bit. It does take a bit. Vulcan can focus and make it happen faster, but in this moment, oof. But it does take a bit for his features to come back, and the second they realize, you're like, Gilliman!
This is your bro?
Yeah. Who's gone stark raving mad at this point? Great scene. Fantastic moment. Kurz did have an impact on him. That would have broken anybody else. It's a miracle he made it that far, but the second he's out, the facade breaks, and he does go completely loopy. It's fixed later, but that's where Vulcan's story ends for a little bit. However, at this point, records get even worse. It's the heresy.
It's the heresy.
They weren't really concerned with keeping everything written down. They're more concerned of how do we keep this functioning. Though we do know some things for sure. For example, like I said, the salamanders were beaten so bad in the massacre, it wasn't 90% casualty rate. It's pretty bad.
That's pretty awful. That's not great. I would say that's bad.
It's so bad, however, that they were put in this grouping with the other three legions that were present on Isfahan 5 called the Shattered Legions. And for the rest of the heresy, those Shattered Legions would try. They really would try and help. But they didn't really do... Oh, I'm going to get in trouble for this. They didn't really do too much other than... God, we need to get our numbers back.
They're the support team.
Yes, exactly. Specifically, more so with the salamanders, because they take longer than normal to get new Marines to join them. Because they, like I said, they care. This shows in everything they do, right? Their training isn't grab as many kids as we could and jam them into that. Whoever comes out, that's fine. No, their training is... They'll nurture you as you grow into this warrior person, and they'll level with you. They'll be like, "Hey, dude, there's a chance you may not make it out of here," and so they take so long to nurture these good recruits. It's why they're fantastic once they're done, but oh, does it take forever? So considering they lost 90% of them in one fell swoop, it took them a while. They definitely tried, but they weren't as relevant as some of the other legions for most of the heresy. They do have some highlights. For example, when they went, because not every salamander was on Isfahan 5. A few weren't, actually. A few very important ones. But when they did hear about this and they went to go see if there are any survivors, hey, is Dad here? Didn't find anything, which is concerning. They really thought Vulcan had died right then and there, because from their perspective, they heard about this massacre that happened and they arrived on this planet covered in black irradiated sand that's a mixture of the ashes of those who've fallen, nuclear fallout, and it's densely packed by all the blood that was spilled that day.
There was not a lot of hope.
It was really tragic. But under all of that, they did find the Iron Dragon. Remember that massive dreadnought Vulcan custom built for that one commander who held the line? It survived all that, and within it, they found that same commander refusing to die. That's the way it's described. He would not pass.
Literally too angry to die.
Not quite. Well, yes, in a way. From there, he got a new title called the Twice Dead, because you can figure this out.
Sekiro.
And he had a fire. He was burning with this fire of vengeance that was so... all-consuming. It was a double-edged sword. The salamanders were happy. Oh my god, we found one of our brothers. Thank you. Have you seen Vulcan? So that was fantastic for their morale. But also, it was so genuinely off-putting that it was a downer on the other Marines that were around him. And then you pair that with the fact that he now has a frankly disturbing amount of control over any machine in his area. I mean... In one really cool battle, there's just all this chaos happening. There's a bunch of kind of robot automata kind of fighting. And he just walks through and every machine like stops and either joins him or ceases functioning. He's a salamander. That's not what they're supposed to be doing. And he just walks right up to their commander.
Because all the machines are shut down.
He gets such a potent control over any and every machine in his area that he's genuinely considered to be an avatar of the Omnissiah.
He went cyberpunk mode.
Yeah. And to this day, he unfortunately, like many heroes in the Imperium, we don't know where he is. However, his suit is still around, and it is still used to inter the greatest of the Salamander heroes. Downside of that is you have to be an incredibly strong person, because the suit's machine spirit is filled with that fury from Istvaan. So not anyone can pilot it.
It's got to be like a specific person.
Yeah, exactly. But that's all a story for another day. They also spent a bit of time, like every loyalist after the heresy, hunting down traitors. Though theirs was specific, they went really mostly after the Emperor's children, because during the heresy, they didn't really just win the war, per se. They didn't just show up and decimate Earth's defenses, but... how do I describe the Emperor's children while staying
kosher?
If you go to Wikipedia and you look up the list of war crimes, you're going to see at the very top, it's going to say, this list is incomplete. You can help by expanding it. They did that a lot. They inflicted more harm on civilians than enemy combatants. Which really didn't sit right with the Salamanders at all. So that one is very personal vendetta. There was a headhunt for that to get bad. Back. Right. It's just, bad. Yeah, they're not great. They also got very upset when the Imperium's religious arm got way out of hand. And we've talked about this in the sister video. There's a guy who is the worst human being ever. And he almost tanks the entire Imperium. One guy. Regular human being, by the way, not super in any way, almost tanks the entire Imperium. And the way the Salamanders deal with this is the most Salamander way possible of, okay, that guy sucks, but I'm not going to start a coup over this because, well, the last time that happened, we saw what the Imperium did. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to spite them. So they have to send a ton of forces after me, and I'm just going to sit here fortified, and because all their forces are over here, less people suffer. And so they did that. They baited them into this long, drawn-out fight where they were just hunkered down and entrenched, and they really couldn't accomplish anything until they went, hold on, you guys are wearing green. Let's go for the civilian population. To which the Salamanders went, hey, guys, wait, no.
Just stay over here.
Completely, right here. Completely unrelated, by the way. Not, oh, these are the civilian cities nearby. Just random cities to draw the Salamanders out, which did work because the Salamanders are not going to just let that happen. So they did come out. Thankfully, that was resolved before it escalated even further than that. But I it shows how highly they value everyone in the Imperium almost over themselves. They also fought off the orcs several times. So many times. They tend to meet the orcs in combat very often. And it's honestly kind of a good thing because they're the best equipped to deal with them. Because they have this propensity for fire weapons and all that. And when you're dealing with orcs, you can't leave anything behind. And so, in a weird way, they're actually very good at dealing with them because orcs can't regenerate without the spores. And spores can't exist if it's all coated in fire. So,
I assume also that the orcs treat them with a little bit more respect, considering green is best color.
Green is best color. I wouldn't be surprised if it also helps them out in some way. They also held multiple capital worlds, becoming kind of a beacon for what an Astartes hero could be to your common man. Common, your average man, if he does actually know about Space Marines, because not everybody does, will love the Salamanders on site. They've acquired that almost mythic reputation. When you see them, you go, oh, thank goodness, they're here. They also did not like that book Gilliman decided to write where he'd split up power. Vulcan especially didn't like it. From the perspective, I just got my family back.
It took us so many years to retrain them. Why?
Exactly. And he joined a bunch of his other brothers who abstained to this, each of them with their own reasons, all of them fair. But Vulcan also is wise enough to see that I can't dig my heels here for, like, I can't dig in for this. So it did happen. The Salamanders were so few in number, even after the heresy, though, it didn't really affect them. There's not many known success. There's a bunch of hypothesized ones, but there's not many known successor chapters of them, just because there's not that many of them. They really got absolutely belted on that planet.
That one planet just...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's also this really touching moment during the heresy. Because, I mean, he doesn't stay insane forever. He does get his mind mostly back together. There's this really touching scene where it's Vulcan talking to Dorne, and Vulcan just goes, I know you're not a fan of this, but like, I need this right now. And they just like hug it out. And again, Dorne's like, I'm not going to say the least sociable Primarch, but he's low. He's low.
It was that moment from Gravity Falls. Awkward sibling hug. Pat.
Kind of. But again, Vulcan's genuinely, he doesn't want anything out of you. It's not, oh, I'm doing this to get X later. It's just out of genuine care and concern. And at the time, Dorne was hilariously stressed, so he appreciated it. So there's that really touching bro moment. He has all kinds of bro moments, and it's such a shame that his family decided to split down the middle like that. However, that's the highlight reel for what we know about the Salamanders after the Heresy. Like I said, they have some successor chapters, but they're not all confirmed per se, but there's a few we know for a fact. Like, for example, there are these black dragons, and they come from this founding that just went wrong. I mean, just everything that could go wrong did go wrong, and so a bunch of them were cursed. They were cursed to grow these bony protrusions that just, it's, think Wolverine's claws.
They went full Wolverine. That's or
Baraka. No, Baraka from Mortal Kombat is a much better example, and some of them even have horns. And so a lot of Space Marines, especially from that cursed founding, like, they just group them all together and they go, something wasn't right with you guys, so we're not going to deal with this. But Salamanders have fully accepted it. The Black Dragons, they're like, nope, this is a blessing. They even pray to be cursed further because they see it as a great thing. And to be fair, I mean, if you regenerate like Vulcan and you have Wolverine's claws, in what world is that not a blessing?
That's pretty cool, yeah.
There's also the Dark Krakens, who have this just cool deep purple black with like white striping.
You have me intrigued.
It's one of the most gorgeous paint schemes. They come from a water world, effectively.
You have me intrigued.
So they're not as heavy on the fire, but they are monster hunters.
Have me intrigued.
Yeah, they're full blown monster. Because again, it's a water world. You can grow.
Copyright.
You can grow. Don't say copyright, because now you're just going to inflict it on us. You can grow food there, obviously. I mean, but seaweed gets old over time. So they've grown really adept at not only just underwater fighting, but just fighting large creatures. Downside, they're salamanders. They're huge. There's not many things bigger than them. But when they encounter it, oh, it's great.
Based, they stuck in Monster Hunter Tri.
Yeah, and so when the Dark Krakens are actually fairly popular because it's quite literally the knight in shining armor coming to slay the dragon. They are really good at showing up where there's some massive monster just terrorizing a town, and they fix it and leave. And it's garnered them a lot of love for every planet they go to. Basically, there's a few others, but those are stories for another day. What really defines them today is, there's no two ways about it. They're hunting for the Infinity Stones. That's what they're doing. They're playing Where's Waldo? Because Vulcan died a lot. As I'm sure you could tell, it's almost a hobby at this point. However, as I'm sure you've noticed, he doesn't tend to stay down. Even his last death wasn't really permanent, per se. Well, It's complicated. He fell face first into a reactor, effectively. That's what happened. And that's where his story ends. However, he did leave behind a book, which is a collection of texts and stuff that could be interpreted as a prophecy. This is very key. Vulcan himself, from what I could find, did not say this, but they've interpreted it from the Tome of Fire that if they gather together all these artifacts, then Vulcan will return.
So they're just on a prop hunt now.
Exactly. Or there's another one where Vulcan will return when the Imperium needs him the most. Right. So those are the two ways Vulcan
Which, if we look at the Imperium nowadays... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there are these nine personal artifacts. This is the one they're putting the most stock into because it's the one that they can most act on. There are these nine personal artifacts made by his hands. It's a one-of-one. It's what Vulcan made. And... they are missing in action. A good chunk of them are missing in action. And the goal is, in theory, if you can get all these nine in one place, snap your fingers, Vulcan will appear, is what's going to happen. So, to that end, they have a title called the Forge Father. And what that person does is they take on Vulcan's name, and they just go on the hunt for these artifacts. That's their full-time job. And they have quite a bit of sway within the chapter, because when they say, oh, I think I found one, it's over here. Sorry, not chapter. They're chapters now. He's got quite a bit of sway in the Salamander's organization, just because if he says, I have it on good authority that there is an artifact there, they'll give him the forces he needs.
Just like, go get it.
Just go get it. Even if you're probably wrong, you could get a little closer, and that could bring us closer to Dad. So that would be fantastic. So that's what a lot of they're doing right now. They're also stuck playing this obnoxious game of keep away with Trazin, because Trazin is a kleptomaniac who likes collecting things that are very rare. There's only 9 of these around. That qualifies as very rare. So Trazin wants them badly. Not even to bring back Vulcan or anything. I just want them. And so they're constantly fighting over them. And it's gotten to the point where Trazin's even lied. Like, oh, I have one. Just to bait them into coming for him. And then he can get the others. It's really annoying.
What a goblin.
Yeah, he's... yeah. And then also there's the possibility that Vulcan himself is in Trazin's collection. Which...
just a single cell of Trazin is there, or single cell of Vulcan is in Trazin's vault.
No, there's a lot of things listed in Trazin's vault, and one of them is a hulking warrior wearing an armor clad with a dragon.
Aww.
Right. So that's one place Vulcan could be hiding right now. He could also just be on some backwater planet, dealing with what's happened to him. Because I'll be honest, 10,000 years sounds like a long time. Well, a little less than 10,000 years. Sounds like a long time to unpack issues, but he was stuck with Kurs for months. You're going to need quite a bit of therapy to get over that.
He's on a Zen spa retreat.
Yeah, exactly. Though there's always the question or the argument, if Vulcan really cares about the people so much, like you mentioned, the Imperium's terrible. Why doesn't he just show up? Well, the two main reasons for that are, A, he does, that's true. He has a big heart. He has a big capacity to love for people. However, that means he also has such a high capacity to feel loss.
Oh.
And Kurs just squeezed that for all it's worth. So the man needs to regenerate. I mean, on an emotional level.
Emotionally, not physically.
It says his body comes back. It says nothing about his mind coming back. His
poor psyche.
He did... don't get me wrong, that fight scene is amazing, and he did a very good job pretending it did nothing for him. Again, it did a lot. I don't even blame him. Kurs got really creative. B is Vulcan hates the Imperium. Would be the other possible reason why he hasn't come back yet. Because, I mean, I've said this a few times this episode. He doesn't care about the administration. He doesn't care about whether you pay your taxes. He doesn't care about the space. He doesn't care about the planets. He just cares about the people first, because that's what makes the Imperium. And to be a man in the Imperium is to be one amongst untold trillions. To live in the cruelest and most brutal regime imaginable. Forget the power of technology and science. Forget the promise of progress and understanding. There is no peace among the stars. It is only an eternity of carnage and slaughter. That is all that is in store for your average person in the Imperium. There's a good reason Vulcan wouldn't want to come back to prop that up. I mean, to be fair, the Imperium wasn't great even when Vulcan was alive, but there's at least the hope that it would be better because the Emperor's there. He's got a wider vision, and genuinely, he did want the best for humanity, even though he didn't always do the best for humanity, you know? So there's always that hope. But now that he's gone.
What else is there? The exactly. Only people controlling the Imperium at this point are like the Ecclesiarchy, and if anything can be read from that one single dude who almost crashed the Imperium.
Not great.
It's not great.
Yeah. There's not really a space for Vulcan in the moment, just because the Imperium has its tax guy back. They have their new War Master back, probably. Vulcan just needs a break. He just needs to keep resting and relaxing wherever he is, and then he'll come back when things are most dire. To be fair, I think we're getting there. Any second now, I would hope he's the next one to come back, but we will see. However, whether Vulcan comes back or not, the Salamanders themselves will always be there to answer the call to the very last man. But that does wrap up our episode on the Salamanders, and I can already hear all the comments from the Salamanders fans politely suggesting, like, hey, Isander, love the video. Great stuff, but you didn't really focus on their love for self-reliance, all the rights they get to, the weird stuff going on with the salamanders' bodies, like the heat vision they have, and a bunch of other stuff. Yeah, they have heat vision. We'll get to that later. When are you going to cover all that? And my response to that would be, you're right. You guys won by such an enormous margin. You'll be getting a second episode that's going to be covering just that next week. This one was just the history of the salamanders, how they started, how they got here, and then we're going to get more into the nitty-gritty next week. So tune in, where we will mostly focus on how exactly they accomplish their whole knight in shining armor shtick. As always, thank you for being you, and we will see you then.